From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Michelle Norris. In the coming weeks, college seniors across the country will get their caps and gowns, accept their diplomas, and enter the worst job market in modern memory. National figures indicate employers may cut on-campus hiring by more than 20% compared to last year. NPR's Larry Abramson reports from Philadelphia that many job counselors and students remain surprisingly hopeful because they have to.
Improv comedy without a net.
It's springtime, and students on the University of Pennsylvania campus are outside enjoying the sun. But the seniors among them who are about to leave this place will find a cold, cruel world waiting for them.
I've been doing this work for almost 30 years, and this is the worst economy I've seen.
Patricia Rose is director of career services at this Ivy League school. She says ordinarily, Penn graduates leave with a bit of a halo around them and are mobbed with job offers. Not this year.
For example, our nurses are experiencing difficulty in finding jobs. This is the first time in my memory when a University of Pennsylvania nurse is having trouble finding a job.
Rose says people are putting off hospital procedures, so the need for nurses is dropping in some areas. At the same time, experienced nurses are putting off retirement. Other areas that were gold mines for Penn grads have also been hit hard, like financial services and business. What's a grad to do? Look for a government job, says Patricia Rose.
The government has been, for a couple of years now, been concerned about the pipeline of young people coming into the federal government in particular, and they are very actively recruiting our students.
And the resume and cover letter tab will provide you with information about what goes into a good resume or a good cover letter.
For many students, the best advice may sound familiar to anyone struggling to find a job. Try harder. Make your resume stand out. Send out more applications. That's what students are hearing a few miles away from Penn at Temple University. The Career Counseling Center there is holding a session for students who have waited until April to start the job hunt.
They're definitely, students are sort of on edge. They are unsure about the job market. They're unsure about their plans.
Temple's Mary Claire Dismuke says students will definitely need to highlight their individual strengths. Students at this diverse urban school have an obvious selling point, she says.
Many of Temple students work while going to school, so they have an ability to manage multiple tasks, as well as they've already had significant responsibilities.
And those responsibilities could end up becoming a temporary career. Teresa Heilman, a biology major, may have to fall back on her current job at a local restaurant.
Sullivan Steakhouse in King of Prussia? Have you been there?
Actually, I haven't, but Heilman assures me it's very good. Heilman says she's actually made some good contacts through her waitressing job. She's been sending out a lot of resumes to local pharmaceutical companies. No offers so far, but she says something's bound to turn up.
It's scary, but I'm persistent. I'm sure my abilities will shine through eventually.
It's important to note that companies are hiring. They're just hiring fewer people, and they can choose from among the top performers. Students like Lisa Zhu, who started looking for work in her junior year at Penn. After doing an internship with McKinsey & Company, she got a job offer from the firm.
I actually didn't take the offer. I'm deferring for 2 years to actually do Teach for America.
That's right. Even in this economy, some students are thinking about more than the bottom line. Lisa Zhu is going to teach in a Bronx high school for 2 years.
Given President Obama's election and a lot of the popularity of public service, you know, this is definitely something that is worth more to me than just the amount that the job pays.
When she's done teaching, the McKinsey job will be waiting for her. In fact, Teach for America reports a record number of applications this year. Students I spoke with are surprisingly upbeat, and there was little whining about their bad timing. One student told me, if you're convinced you can't get a job, you probably won't. Larry Abramson, NPR News.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel. Nearly half of Afghanistan's children don't go to class, most of them in the Taliban-rife south. That's according to the country's education minister. Hundreds of schools have closed in Kandahar and neighboring provinces because of militant attacks and threats. Those most affected are Afghan girls, but as NPR's Soraya Sahardi-Nelson reports from Kandahar, many of these girls refuse to give up their schooling, no matter the cost.
Gulaleh is 14. Her father, a dual Afghan-German citizen, is a chemistry professor who returned here to his native Kandahar to teach. But his daughter doesn't attend school. Gulale says that she hasn't for nearly 18 months, that her father won't let her go. Derwiza Açaksay looks sadly at the shy teenager he adopted here. He fiddles with his worry beads as he explains in German to a visitor that he has no choice but to keep her home.
People assume I'm rich because of the fact I moved here from Germany. So she's a target for kidnappers. They'll cut off one of her hands and send it to me and tell me to pay a ransom if I want her back.
Such fears are not unfounded. The professor's late wife, Sitara, who served on Kandahar's provincial council, was gunned down earlier this month in front of their home. Açaksay says the only hope for his daughter's education is for them to leave Afghanistan, which he plans to do next month. But most families here don't have that option, lacking the financial means or Western passports. Education officials say more often than not, girls here in Kandahar and the surrounding provinces simply stay home, especially after attacks like those last November, when men on motorcycles sprayed or poured acid on 11 female students and 4 teachers as they headed to school here. The most badly injured was Shamsia Hosseini. The burn marks are still visible on the ninth grader's face. She needs surgery her family can't afford. Still, unlike most others who were attacked that day, Shamsia has returned to Mirwai school. She describes what happened to her in a rapid monotone. She says she refuses to dwell on the attack, and she's clearly still traumatized. Shamsia goes to the front of the cavernous classroom and reads a duddy passage from a well-worn textbook, but she quickly falls apart. I can't do this, she mutters, and returns to her seat. The young students at her school are more enthusiastic. In a UNICEF tent, 8-year-old Shazia points to Quranic verses on the chalkboard and reads them aloud for her classmates to repeat as a jet flies overhead. Their teacher is Sedire Rezaei. She puts on a brave face for the children. But inside, she, like most teachers, is frightened.
It's very unsafe in the city. Every time you walk to school, you're looking behind your back to see if a motorcycle is following you. And it's even scarier because we're with these little girls.
Still, Rezaei and others believe staying at home is not the answer. Instead, a growing number of female students are choosing something that addresses their desire for education and their need for safety. Literacy courses taught clandestinely inside people's homes. Like this elementary Dari language class, 17-year-old Marzia Sadat teaches in the walled courtyard of her parents' house in Kandahar. Her students, who range in age from 14 to 40, all wear their opaque burqas in class on this day, guarding their anonymity against Western visitors. The youngest is Amine. She says her parents have always refused to let her go to school because of the insecurity, but they agreed to let her come here because the class is inside a neighbor's home. The 10-month course is similar to the secret classes Afghan girls attended during the Taliban days when female education was banned, except now the effort is sanctioned by the Afghan government and funded by international groups like the World Food Program and Canadian International Development Agency. Afghan supervisors of the courses, who asked they not be taped or named for fear of reprisals, say they started about 200 of these in-home courses a couple of years ago. Today, there are more than twice as many, each with about 30 students. To help coax families into sending their girls, students are given wheat, cooking oil, and salt. So are the teachers like Marzia, who receive no salary. She says she doesn't mind because her aim is to make sure her country doesn't fall to militants.
I want to serve my nation and my country. If the militants kill me, so be it. I pray to God, as do my mother and father, and that gives me the strength not to be afraid.
Marzia says her efforts are paying off. Her youngest student, Amine, says she is determined to stay in school so she can become a nurse or doctor someday. Saraya Sarhadi Nelson, NPR News, Kandahar.
And you can see photos of Afghan girls' schools in Kandahar at npr.org. From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel. For 245,000 American children today, swine flu didn't seem so bad. It meant a day out of school to spend, well, to spend in front of the Xbox or the PlayStation, probably. As a precaution, 433 schools are now closed in 17 states, from Maine to Alabama to California. The bulk of the closures are in Texas, and leading the way there, Fort Worth. Classrooms there are shut through next week, as NPR's Wade Goodwin reports.
In times of public health crisis, it's important for leaders to communicate in a language people can understand. Fort Worth Mayor Mike Moncrief is an excellent example.
This is a different critter than Fort Worth has dealt with before, but we will address it.
There are now 9 confirmed cases in Fort Worth, and the school district has set up a hotline to answer parents' questions. The SAT tests tomorrow have been canceled, too. While the schools are wiped down, Dr. Sandra Parker, county medical director, says the kids need to stay away from each other.
We have recommended that they stay at home. We don't think that that they should be involved in any group activities outside of the school. So that would include things like the mall, going to the movie theaters.
Well, how about the zoo? It's a warm, cloudy, breezy Friday at the world-famous Fort Worth Zoo, and they're expecting north of 2,000 children.
For the safety of animals, I have to ask you to remove your lid from your cup.
Over at the cheetah enclosure, a pounding waterfall completes the jungle scene. Mandy Anseldua is here with his wife, Vilma, and their 2 sons, Anthony and Nathan, who are in 1st and 2nd grade. But not today. They're on swine flu holiday.
Yeah, we didn't know what to think. We saw kids the other day walking to school with a mask on, so.
Ansel Dua runs a call center and gets benefits, so he's taking a paid vacation today. But some of his employees who don't get paid vacation are suffering.
I had a couple of girls that are in the Fort Worth district as well, and both of them didn't have babysitters, so they had to miss a day of work, non-paid. I actually had a girl come to the call center with her child yesterday and worked all day while her 10-year-old was in the call center. So.
Yeah, they're lying. African lion.
6-year-old Luke Grimes has heard all about the H1N1 virus. He, for one, is not missing first grade, and he's not worried about being at the zoo either.
Were you scared to come here?
No.
Tell me why not.
Because I wanted to see the animals.
Parents here don't seem overly concerned, saying if their children get the flu, they'll take them to the doctor. One after another, the kids scramble up the log fences in front of the animals, leaning in towards them as far as they can. Whether those hands will get washed before they go in mouths or noses is probably an even bet. Wade Goodwin, NPR News, Dallas.
High school juniors, put down your pencils, cease your texting. This item is really for you. Next year, many of you will have to craft a succinct, insightful, and grammatical essay on a topic that someone at the college of your choice thinks is thought-provoking, the dreaded college admissions essay. Well, the Wall Street Journal has turned the tables on several college presidents by having them write 500-word essays on assigned themes, and the results are pretty impressive. These people didn't rise to the top of academe for nothing. Robert Zimmer, the president of the University of Chicago, was given a quotation from the German poet Rilke, "At present, you need to live the question." That, Zimmer writes, requires a habit of challenging one's own assumptions, even while analyzing and questioning others. Importantly, questioning also requires listening, and his essay actually poses many questions. President Amy Gutman of the University of Pennsylvania was asked to write page 217 of her 300-page autobiography. Not being a high school senior, she could plausibly figure that she's already lived page 217, and she describes becoming president of Penn and embracing the goal of raising the university from excellence to eminence. Earlier today, I spoke with Deborah Spar, the president of Barnard College. The journal told her to describe a daily routine or tradition that holds special meaning for her.
I found it, as I'm sure many potential students did, it was a very tough question to answer in an interesting way in 500 words or less.
Yes, in fact, your lead here is routines are good, routines are comforting, routines bring order and efficiency to the messiness of life. I do so wish I had some.
Yes. I decided, as many college applicants do, that this question was best answered by actually not answering it and turning it on its head instead.
The clever, evasion, perhaps, but finding something more interesting about routine to say.
Yes, the time-worn trick of of answering the question you actually wanted to answer rather than one you were asked.
Well, it's a very nice essay that you wrote. And did you come away from this experience feeling that, yeah, this really helps you find the best Barnard women you can find, or maybe the experience is overrated, having college admissions essays?
Well, I think college essays are almost certainly overrated. The problem is that we haven't been able to come up with anything better. And I think, you know, having to choose between SAT scores and college essays, I'll go with the college essays, even if they push students to answer fairly uninteresting questions in fairly routine ways. So at least the essay gives an option, or the possibility that a kid really can reveal something important about their personality.
Something I've always wondered, by the way, is there a black market in college application essays that college admissions officers all know about and are on the lookout for?
Well, I know it better at the graduate school level where I was previously, and for sure there is a black market there.
There is,
yeah,
I see.
Unfortunately, but you can usually pick them out.
See, a practiced eye can do that.
Yes, and our admissions officers, like I'm sure admissions officers everywhere, read thousands and thousands of these. So if something's out there on the black market, you probably will have seen it already.
Well, Deborah Spire, president of Barnard College, thanks a lot for talking with
Thank
us.
Thank you.
You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.